As far as we're concerned, we're going to welcome, as I mentioned to you earlier, my old school pal, someone whose career I've watched very closely. In 2012, he quit as chief executive of Avis Car Rental to fight a toll road fee that was being introduced that he felt was unjust. And he told people to give him 6 months, maybe a year, to sort it out. Well, 12 years later, e-tolls are dead. Government wrote off 43 billion rand. And along the way, the organization, OUTA, defended over 2,000 individual motorists against summons for non-payment because compliance had collapsed to just 40%. The public simply refused to pay a tax it didn't believe in. It was cited earlier today by Davi Ruit as an example of a tax revolt. Wayne did his bit to make sure that those who stood by him didn't suffer and sent a message to those on high, to Pretoria, that they'll never forget. He is only getting started, as you'll find out in the next few minutes. Let's welcome Wayne Duvenage.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's leading boutique wealth manager, trusted to guide families for over 22 years. Invest better with Brenthurst.
Thanks, Ellie. Thank you, everybody, for being here. That was the logical song. You don't have many logical thinkers in government these days. And it's strange because it's sometimes a no-brainer. But what I don't want to talk about today is the extent of corruption in this country. I think that much is evident to everyone in the room. But what I want to discuss is solutions and why this country and cities like Johannesburg are fixable, very fixable, given the right conditions. And it's the influence on those conditions that society has that I want to touch on today. Two of those conditions that we're able to have profound effect on to bring about the changes, accountability and transparency. And I'll elaborate on why that is and how we should attract more civil society and citizen attention and engagement in those areas. But before I do, Alec, thanks for this conference and to your entire team who really organize a conference of such excellent caliber. It's no small task and we appreciate it. So thanks, God, for doing what you've done. It's a privilege to be here. So when I last spoke at the Hermanus Business Conference, I reflected on this extractive nature of government. And cadre deployment, cronyism, nepotism have created a public sector that has lost its customer-centric focus, if it ever had one. Instead of constantly looking at ways to improve productivity, reduce costs, and supply better services, the instinct really just defaults to employing more people, appointing more consultants, conceding to ever-growing wage increase demands, and just simply to spend more. But that doesn't mean to say we have to stand by and accept it. And we've seen how heightened public pressure, we've seen how the government of national unity has been able to stave off 2% VAT increases, and how we've been able to, as civil society, bring some sanity to the situation by standing up and standing strong. So that e-toll example is just one of them. I mentioned it before, our ability to thwart government's brain-dead plan to park 3 Turkish ships in our harbors and subject us to a 20-year extraction of 240 billion rand minimum out of our economy was just unacceptable over a 20-year period. And it's this same kind of civil activism that will negate Eskom and local government's draconian plans to force homeowners and businesses to register their solar systems after years of incentivizing and asking society to reduce their need for electricity from the state. We won't stand by and allow these irrational policies to take hold. We have to push back, and we will do so. What I want to say is that South Africa today doesn't need another anti-corruption strategy. We've actually got one. It's a very good one, developed by the National Anti-Corruption Council, which involved civil society, government, and business. It spent years in developing, and it was presented to the president a year ago in August 2025, and it's still sitting there. So while we have this leaderless government that lacks the will and desire to implement it, we don't have to wait around to implement citizen-led initiatives that revolutionize the fight against corruption. So let me explain how and why these two, what I call revolutionary processes, if we revolutionize them, of accountability and transparency, can and do make a massive impact in the fight against corruption. Because at ARTA, we've come to know that corruption survives largely where accountability is weak and when where transparency is absent. In other words, what I'm actually saying is that corruption is not the primary disease. It's the symptom. The real disease is this gaping deficiency in accountability and transparency, and this is what we do have power over. And that distinction means everything, because when bridges collapse, we don't blame gravity. We ask why the engineers failed. And yet when corruption occurs, we tend to focus only on the person who stole the money. And of course, we can't ignore that fact, and we need to see the prosecutions take place. But fighting corruption is far more effective when we drive proactive initiatives that prevent it. Corruption doesn't succeed on its own. It succeeds because there are weak and failed systems that allow it to succeed. Oversight fails. Governance fails. The warning signs are ignored. And the people responsible for asking the difficult questions either choose not to, or they are prevented from doing so. Every corrupt tender that we see tells a similar story of how someone wrote an unnecessary specification to favor a preferred bidder, or that the tender evaluation process was manipulated, or somebody approved the recommendation when they shouldn't have, somebody authorized payment before the work was complete, sometimes before it had even started. And somewhere along the line, we just ignore these warning signs early enough, and we've got to make those warning signs appear a lot quicker. By the time the public money disappears, accountability has failed many times over. And that's why we've come to believe something very simple. You don't build an honest country by chasing dishonest people. You build an honest country by designing honest and robust systems. Those systems that are going to protect honest people and expose the dishonest ones. Because weak systems do precisely the opposite. Whenever we discuss fixing South Africa, we tend to gravitate towards talking about how government should fix our criminal justice system, how we need stronger law enforcement, and of course, we do. We got powerful insights of that yesterday from Ian Cameron. We need a stronger National Prosecuting Authority in IDAC. The Madlanga Commission gives us testament to that. So I agree with those completely, but while we're waiting for government to play its role and its part in addressing these issues, which, by the way, is starting to happen in some of these areas, we can and we must do more with citizen-led initiatives that make the country corruption-proof. And with AI technology today, it's a lot easier to do, even from the outside. So we can't simply rely on accountability being driven from within the state and led by corrupt when it is led by corrupt mindsets of a political party such as the ANC. We need to apply external citizen-led initiatives that provide meaningful and independent oversight, which acts as a firewall between poor governance and corruption. Every successful organization understands that leaders do not operate without independent challenges. Boards and audit committees and risk committees, their roles are not simply to approve decisions. The roles are to ask the uncomfortable questions, to challenge assumptions, to demand evidence, and to protect the institutions from abuse. So when those firewalls become strong, poor decisions are stopped before they become scandals. But when they are weak, corruption doesn't have to break in. It just simply walks through the front door. And the encouraging news is that what we've recently started seeing is what happens when courageous people enter these systems. New boards, new executives. And the minister, Dean McPherson, yesterday is an example of them. I'll touch on what is happening there quite shortly. But public servants who quietly refuse to compromise their principles and insist on proper processes instead of political convenience are the individuals that become the obstacles to corruption. Unfortunately, so often they do pay the price with their lives and their livelihoods. But when they stand their ground and when they are empowered by civil society, they can succeed. And when they succeed, we all succeed. So what I'm saying is that in order to revolutionize and externalize these oversight and exposure initiatives, we've got to do a little bit more. And we've seen this recently, by the way, in the insurance CETA, where a new board was determined to uphold governance and resisted political pressure and suspended the protected CEO, Gugu Mkhize, and initiated an independent investigation against her. That board was confronted immediately by Buti Manamela, the minister, as soon as he heard about it. And he demanded, he wrote to them and demanded that they abandon their plan to suspend and reverse that suspension. And that in situ board refused to do so. Unheard of up until now. Think about that. A board recently appointed by the minister went and suspended a person who's protected by that minister and many other people in high places in government and refused to accept his decision or his instruction to reverse their decision. That's what accountability looks like. And that's what moral courage looks like. And when civil activism organizations shine the light on that and support that type of conduct, it is powerful. And it really does thwart this abuse of power in government. And we've seen how psychologically, through the media and the various channels that we use, we're able to get into ensuring that those decisions stay and stand strong. What it does, it enables more courageous people to make decisions and hold others to account. And it brings about the necessary change. And leads me to talking now about this revolution of transparency that we've needed. And I've said it many times, transparency is the enemy of corruption. Not because transparency makes people honest, but because it makes dishonesty far more difficult to hide. So I want you to imagine a situation where every government tender, every contract variation, every payment is published online in real time in a searchable public platform. Not months later, not after investigative journalists have uncovered it, not after the money's disappeared, but as the tender process unfolds, before the money is spent. Imagine communities seeing what projects are planned in their neighborhoods and exactly what government intends to pay for them. And these are real life situations that we can make happen. Think for a moment of what the residents in an Eastern Cape community would have done had they known that 9 pit latrine toilets and 2 urinals and a limited classroom refurbishment was going to cost them 4.8 million rand. That's what happened. They would have prevented it had they known ahead of time or at the time. Sadly, it was too late. The money had changed hands and it was irretrievable. You see, an effective transparency system allows questions to be asked before the corruption succeeds, not afterwards. Heightened transparency doesn't just simply expose corruption, but it prevents it. And today we have that technology. We didn't have this before. We got a real taste of that yesterday with Stafford Mazey in his talk on AI. Let me tell you that artificial intelligence can be used to identify suspicious procurement patterns, inflated pricing, suspicious conflicts of interest, unusual supplier behavior, and it can all happen within minutes rather than months. And it exposes the red flags of procurement irregularities that can trigger proactive events to expose and halt tenders from being awarded. It's here. Imagine then a procurement transparency platform that monitors every municipality and every government department and their procurement and tender processes, continuously managed not by government, but by civil activism organizations that empower communities, empowers the media, and acts as a watchdog through networks across the country that exposes this corruption before it begins. Imagine then a trained network of citizen volunteers across the country in every town who have an interest in this work and that need this information to identify the red flags and to start confronting councillors and councils of exactly what's happening and stopping these tenders from happening before they're awarded. Imagine hundreds of local eyes replacing a handful of investigators and municipal inspectors. This isn't science fiction, folks. It exists today. We've seen this technology. What it does, it scrapes the procurement data across government departments, across municipal websites. It analyzes tenders, specifications. It gathers tender notifications, identifies companies that are shortlisted. It traces supplier history. And just highlights irregular patterns. It's powerful. The other day when I was sitting with these propeller heads in their offices having a look at it, they'll show you they punch in one telephone number, just one telephone number. They'll show you that it is linked to 15 companies. And those 15 companies have got 48 tenders to the value of 3.6 billion rand. One telephone number. And then you look at the addresses and you look at the registered companies, and the spider web just starts to grow. And when you put this information in the hands of people who need it, who people can use it, who people are trained to use it, we can do amazing stuff to stop what is actually going on. It's incredibly powerful. And it's been shown to Treasury. And it's Treasury's role to use information. It's Treasury's role to make sure that the e-tender portal system is updated. And we know it isn't, because the same system will show you that one tender in a municipality has been put on the e-portal system. And when you look at their website, they've done 15 to 20 tenders a month. And these are the instructions from Treasury, and yet municipalities and government departments ignore it. So we don't have to wait for government to express interest in such initiatives, because they've been offered it and they don't want to do it. So I want to share with you an insightful engagement that I had with a professor, Phil Nichols, from Wharton School in the States. He's a very famous expert on corruption. He made an observation with us at an anti-corruption think tank a little while ago. He says, despite all our challenges, South Africa possesses something that many countries battling systemic corruption do not have. We have a remarkable, resilient accountability ecosystem, he says, a free media, independent courts, investigative journalism, strong civil action organizations, public interest litigation, and active citizens. And while he acknowledges these institutions alone do not eliminate corruption, but they get in the way of corruption. They expose it, they slow it down, and they heighten the process of social accountability. And he says, in many countries, organizations like ours, BizNews, Section 27, Helen Suzman Foundation, Saka Lecha, AfriForum, we simply wouldn't exist. Journalists would have been imprisoned and activists would just disappear. And in pointing this out, Professor Nichols wasn't suggesting that we celebrate or just accept the status quo of the extent of our corruption. In fact, he said he was amazed at how effective we are as society, and reminds us that the exposure is the beginning of the accountability stronghold that we have. It's a very, very powerful tool, and we are doing an excellent job in his view, and he's traveled to most countries and advises many countries on how to tackle corruption. This is not possible in many, many countries. I want to touch on the topic just quickly that came up yesterday. You know, we often hear that cities like Joburg are not fixable. My response to that absolutely is. Not because corruption isn't deeply embedded. It is embedded in a city like Joburg. And that's a microcosm of the country. But because systems can be rebuilt and the corruption networks can be removed. And by the way, it doesn't take years. It's not going to take a long time. What matters is leadership. All you need is a change in leadership to become the catalyst for significant change. We heard that yesterday from Dean McPherson, who reflected that he was the only change in a department of 5,000. Now, some might have heard that, well, how does one person change an entity that has 5,000 people filled with corrupt networks and that's been infiltrated completely? Of course, there's corruption within it, but it's not impossible to do. You heard yesterday, Dean was telling us how his leadership change shifted the organization and was able to introduce performance change, deal with things like construction mafia, outdated leases, and really doing an excellent job in a department that was not doing an excellent job. So if one person's appointment was effective in triggering meaningful change, what does that tell us? Well, it actually tells us that inside the system, there are hundreds, thousands of good people that only need that catalyst to start doing good work, to start moving in the right direction. And given the motivation and ability, they will do so. You see, that department's not filled with 5,000 corrupt people. And I wanted to say that in most government departments, in fact, in all of them, the good outweigh the corrupt by 9-1. It's a handful of corrupt people that have a network, and everybody else puts their head down because they want to keep their jobs and they want to do the work. So I think Joburg is very fixable, and very fixable in a couple of years, not 5 years, not 10 years. Because when you get somebody like Helen Zille in, and we've engaged with her, we've presented an anti-corruption strategy, which she appreciates, and will probably will assist her to implement it. It's not difficult stuff. You externalize the call centers, the whistleblowing hotlines. You have the professionals that put together the forensic reports are handed back to an integrity entity within the city, who then work with HR and go through this process. You have the independent chairs. You have the hearings. You suspend, you dismiss, and you replace with credible people and good leadership. And you bring about that change, and you can do so very quickly if it's systemized and you do it properly. And then you drive along with that a moral regeneration program, an integrity program to the other 14,000 staff that are there. And let me tell you what will happen. They will come on board. They will not stand by. They don't want to work for an institution that fails. I was saying to Helen, imagine today if you asked every one of Joburg City employees wear this t-shirt that says, "I'm a proud employee of the city of Johannesburg." They will laugh at you. But your challenge is to get them to wear that in a couple of years. And given the systems, the motivation to do so, they will. I can assure you of that. None of this is revolutionary. It just merely requires disciplined, structured governance. And let me just close with this. You know, people often ask, what keeps an organization like Outer going? The answer is simple, but it's multifaceted. We employ professional people at market-related salaries because you cannot do this work with volunteers. And we ensure they have the right tools and the systems. We run good governance programs. But one thing imprinted in the psyche of an organization like ours is the value of resilience. I'm not talking about resilience that is indicative of accepting failure. It's far from it. projects we undertake take years and they cost millions of rands. Whether it's e-tolls, whether it's car powerships, 350 other projects we've done. But collectively, I think civil activism has saved this country billions of rands. And it's held many accountable, and we've removed many people at the resistance from government from their positions. And now it's just one of many organizations. The collective power is immense. And so while political change happens and it unfolds, and it is doing so, civil society has to stand strong. It has to toe the line, has to hold the line, has to hold these batons. And we have to just continue standing between this abuse of power and the public interest. But we cannot do it alone. We need business. We need philanthropy. We need citizens who understand that accountability is an investment in this country's future. It's not a cost. And many of you in this room already support us, and we value that. But imagine what we could do if we could achieve the power and capacity of civil activism that is doubled or tripled its capacity. Imagine if accountability grew faster than corruption. Imagine if transparency became the norm instead of the exception. That's the revolution that we still need to see unfold. It's not another strategy. It's an accountability revolution. It's a transparency revolution. And while we're doing it, we should be doing a hell of a lot more of it. Thank you for listening.
This BizNews production is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth. A Mauritian trust offers a powerful solution for global estate planning. Invest better with Brenthurst. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now.